Hello, this is Kess with the Decatur Herald and Review, dated February 28th, 2017. We'll begin today's reading on the front page with the article headlined, "It's Happening, Cubs Trophy Headed to Decatur." Cubs fans rejoice. The World Series trophy will make a stop in Decatur as part of its journey around central Illinois next month. The trophy is scheduled to be displayed at the Decatur Civic Center from 8 to 9:30 a.m. Thursday, March 9th. It's a stop that has been months in the making, says John Althoff, sponsorship coordinator for State Farm. The Bloomington-based insurance company is the sponsor of the Cubs Trophy Tour, and Althoff knew early in the process that Decatur deserved to be a stop. But with so many other cities clamoring for a glimpse of history, scheduling became difficult. The trophy visited Champaign, Bloomington, and Normal. It was slated for an appearance in Springfield on March 8th. Decatur fans became anxious, with everyone from media to state and local politicians getting in contact with Althoff. Who could blame them? After all, they had been patient since the last time the Cubs won a series, 108 years ago. Finally, the schedule for the Decatur stop was confirmed on Monday. Decatur deserves it because of their history with Chicago professional sports teams, the Cubs and Bears, said Althoff, who now lives in Bloomington but grew up in Decatur. I know there's a number of Cubs fans in the Decatur area who haven't ever seen it before. It's part of history, and I hope they can relish it. The first 500 fans will receive a wristband to ensure their ability to see the trophy, with additional fans accommodated as time permits. One person determined to be among the crowd that day is Mallory Hunter. "I'm going to stand in line for as long as I have to take a picture next to it," said Hunter of Decatur. "I may have to take some time off work and rearrange my kid's schedule, but this is a once-in-a-lifetime thing." Hunter said she's always been a huge Cubs fan and will likely see the trophy with some co-workers at Vita Center for Women and her sister, a season ticket holder. "This is huge, something I would have never imagined," Hunter said. "But in the last couple of years, they've had a team to get excited about and that finally won it. For the trophy to come to our hometown, it's just amazing." City Councilman Jerry Dawson echoed that sentiment. Dawson was among those who were in contact with Althoff as he worked to schedule the stop. "There's so many good, loyal Cub fans here in Decatur," said Dawson, who is scheduled to visit the Cubs' spring training later this week. "I just thought that if they're going to go to Springfield and Champaign, they've really got to come here. I think we've had very loyal Cub fans here that stick with them, even, you know, we've had some pretty bad years. It just makes it more special that we've waited so long for it." Another one of those loyal Decatur Cub fans is Adam Carlson, who said he's been cheering on the team since before they got good. He's going to see the trophy on March 9th if he can get off work. For Carlson, the World Series was already a life-changing event. He and his wife Julia both got Cubs-themed tattoos. "There were a lot of times when I thought it wasn't going to happen," Carlson said. "When they got down to 3-1 last year, it started to feel like same old Cubs. When they finally came through, it took me a while to comprehend it. It was pretty special." Althoff said Cubs staff who organized the viewing events maintain an efficient atmosphere. Each person is allowed one photo with the trophy, either individually or as a group. "It is really a well-run, well-oiled machine in all the times that I've seen it done," he said. "It goes by very quickly." And in all the times he's seen it done, Althoff said the feeling never gets old. "When you've never seen it before, I don't think you can get enough of seeing it." Mayor Julie Moore Wolf said the trophies coming to the city is exciting, even for people who aren't Cubs fans. "Planning will now begin for an appropriate way to make the occasion. We've got to make some real plans to welcome the trophy in all its glory to Decatur," she said. Police seek suspects in attempted murders, related weekend shootings. Decatur. Detectives are investigating the attempted murders of a Decatur man and his sister Saturday night and a spate of other weapons offenses early Sunday that are believed to be related. The 20-year-old man and his sister, 24, were hit by multiple gunshots as they backed out of a driveway in the 1000 block of Westview Street about 11:20 p.m. Saturday. Police did not have updated condition reports on the pair of victims, although it is understood both are expected to survive. In the early morning hours following the shootings, written police reports say some buildings were hit by gunfire, but there were no reported injuries. Police logged unlawful use of weapons incidents beginning about 1 a.m. in the 500 block of West Division Street, then at 2:10 a.m. in the 3700 block of North Portage Place, and an aggravated discharge of a firearm in the 1700 block of West Center Street at 4:19 a.m. A final unlawful use of weapons incident was reported at 4:41 a.m. in the 100 block of West Leafland Avenue. Sergeant Chris Copeland confirmed that those incidents were believed to be related. Copeland said he could not comment yet on the search for suspects but appealed for the public's help. If anybody has any information, we encourage them to call us 217-424-2734 or Crime Stoppers 217-423-8477. Neighbors who live close to the Westview Street shooting scene described their road as normally quiet, with a lot of the homes occupied by people who are retired. But they said that the sense of calm faded in the last 6 weeks when some much younger residents moved onto the block where the shooting took place. Oscar Green, who lives across the street, said he had just walked indoors from his front porch when he heard 3 shots and saw several vehicles fleeing in different directions. I heard the shots, pow, 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 and then everybody in that house scattered just like roaches, said Green, 65. One of the vehicles tore up my neighbor's van, which is parked right in front of my house. Green said he had regularly seen a lot of vehicles coming and going from the house opposite it, and it had made him suspicious about what went on in there. But Green said it would take more than gunfire to chase him away from the neighborhood where he has enjoyed living since July. I live and walk by faith. I don't live in fear, added Green, who took it upon himself to clear up pieces of shattered vehicle glass and debris from the street. God don't want me to fear nothing, and I'm not going to fear nothing out here, he added. We got a lot of praying people in this city. The city prays hard, and prayer is what keeps hurt, harm, and danger away from praying people. Two home care workers sentenced for Medicaid fraud, Decatur. Two female home care aides who defrauded Medicaid have been placed on probation and ordered to repay taxpayers. One of the women, Cassandra Miller from Decatur, pleaded guilty to providing false timesheets between August 7, 2015 and April 5, 2016. Miller, 51, appeared in Macon County Circuit Court on February 21st and was sentenced to 4 years of probation and 50 hours of community service. She was ordered to pay restitution of more than $5,000. The other woman, Monica Brown, 43, from Chicago, appeared in court in Chicago on February 16th and admitted billing for services to a person who had been dead for 2.5 years. She was sentenced to 3 years of probation and ordered to pay restitution of $30,822. The Illinois State Police Medicaid Fraud Control Bureau said it had caught both women in 2 investigations that targeted the activities of the women who were supposed to be providing services to people who needed help looking after themselves. Unfortunately, this type of fraud is something we continue to see all too often, said State Police Director Leo P. Schmitz. There are limited funds and resources for individuals who truly need the help, and Medicaid recipients will continue to suffer as a result of criminals who defraud the system. Illinois Attorney General Lisa Madigan said the two suspects had preyed on a state-administered government program that is already under tremendous strain. She added, "Vulnerable residents of Illinois rely on home care workers. We will continue to prosecute individuals who abuse this program." Driver in fatal Coles County crash faces felony charges in Charleston. A Mattoon woman faces felony offenses for allegedly causing an accident that killed one passenger and seriously injured another in the car she was driving. Shelby N. Espe was intoxicated and speeding when she ran a stop sign at rural Coles County intersection, resulting in fatal injuries to Kayla L. Eggers and injuring Andrea E. Garcia, her charges allege. Espe, 23, was cited for driving under the influence and other traffic violations following the accident. The recently filed felony charges contain the additional allegations that the accident caused the fatal and serious injuries to the other passenger in Espe's car. The accident occurred late on January 20th at the intersection of Illinois 130 and County Road 1500 North, about 6 miles north of Charleston, according to information from the Coles County Sheriff's Office. After going through the intersection, the car went off the road and traveled about 400 feet before hitting a bridge and going into a creek, the sheriff's office indicated. The felony charges against Espe include reckless homicide, which accuses her of unintentionally causing another person's death, namely by speeding and disregarding the stop sign at the intersection, resulting in the accident. The other felony charge is aggravated driving under the influence of alcohol, accusing Espe of being intoxicated at the time of the accident, leading to Garcia's serious injuries.
According to the sheriff's office, Eggers, a 23-year-old Mattoon resident, was thrown from the vehicle and was pronounced dead at the scene. Garcia, also 23, for whom records show addresses in Effingham and in Charleston, and Espe were taken to the Carle Foundation Hospital in Urbana after the accident. Garcia's injuries included several broken bones, and she was released from the hospital last week, according to Coles County Assistant State's Attorney Tom Booker. Espe has made appearances in traffic court on the earlier citations and is scheduled for another hearing on April 5th. The traffic citations are DUI, failure to reduce speed to avoid an accident, and disregarding a stop sign. However, Booker said she'll likely make a separate appearance in felony court before her next traffic court appearance date. Attorney Sean Britton is representing Espe in the traffic cases, but no attorney is on record as representing her in the felony case yet. The reckless homicide charge against Espe could result in a prison sentence of 2 to 5 years if there is conviction, and the aggravated DUI charges carry possible prison sentences of 1 to 12 years. State laws require there to be extraordinary circumstances in favor of probation for it to be considered an aggravated DUI conviction. Nothing keeps Mattoon boy from Braille. Title. Mattoon. L.T. Spears enjoys reading, but it was his competitive edge that drove him to scan his fingers across 4,015 Braille pages for a multi-state contest earlier this year. The Mattoon middle school 7th grader read numerous Braille-translated books and magazines to win the Great Lakes Braille Readers Are Leaders contest. Of the contestants involved, Spears not only took up the top spot in his middle school grade category, but he read the most pages out of all those in the contest spanning 13 grade levels. LT said despite his efforts to read as many books as possible, he was nervous when he got the call after the reading period ended. "I thought Lisa McDaniel was joking," he said, describing the phone call he had with McDaniel, the EIASE teacher who tracked his pages. LT, a visually impaired student with Eastern Illinois Area Special Education, EIASE, has competed in the contest before, adding 1,000 pages each year. Last year, he was just shy of taking first place. LT read just a smidgen less than a competitor from Minnesota. Before this year's contest started, he was determined it would be different. By the end of the contest, he said he had read about 50 books. Throughout those 7 weeks, LT managed to glide through all the pages of the Michael Vay series, much of the Series of Unfortunate Events books, and other books he came across, such as The War That Saved My Life by Kimberly Brubaker Bradley. He stuck to the fiction he prefers that has a substantial amount of comedy and action. LT developed his love of reading from his mother, Gina Spears, who is blind and also an avid reader in Braille. Gina Spears says she has a close connection with LT, so when her son got the call that he surpassed everyone in the contest as well as in his category, Gina Spears said she was ecstatic. LT plans to read 5,000 pages next year, hoping to keep his streak going. In another Braille contest, the Braille Challenge, this one specific to literacy skills, LT took first place in the junior varsity bracket for middle schoolers. Two others from Mattoon, Olivia Rios and Sydney Horn, competed as well. Olivia took first place in the apprentice bracket for second graders. Hit and run fatal in Oakland. Illinois State Police agents are investigating the death of an Oakland man as potentially a hit and run vehicular accident. Michael S. Hoskinson, 42, was found dead at the accident scene approximately 6:15 a.m. Sunday on Danville Road at East Belvin Street in Oakland. His autopsy was held Monday. The suspect vehicle may have driver's side damage, broken driver's side headlights, and hood damage. The large headlight fragments left at the scene could possibly be from a 2009 to 2012 sport utility vehicle, most likely a Chevrolet Traverse, Buick Enclave, or GMC Acadia, according to authorities. Anyone who has information about the accident is asked to contact State Police at 217-867-2050. Decatur drug charges. Police arrested a Decatur man Friday night on drug dealing charges. A September 20th raid on the 29-year-old suspect's home in the 900 block of West Packard Street had led to the seizure of 298 bags of a powerful synthetic cannabis called K2 and 4 bags of methamphetamine. Sworn statements allege he suspect admitted he had been selling both K2 and meth. He was booked on charges of drug possession and possession with intent to deliver. He was also charged with unlawful possession of a firearm by a felon after police say they found a semi-automatic handgun along with ammunition in a china cabinet drawer. Decatur. Damage. Abuse alleged. Police allege a Decatur man became destructive and physically abusive after an argument sparked when he and his girlfriend bumped into her former boyfriend in a bar Sunday night. Sworn statements say the 27-year-old suspect returned to their home on East Carroll Drive and proceeded to demolish everything in sight. The girlfriend, 27, later returned, and the argument ending up with the woman and her sister, who had been babysitting the three children of the suspect and his girlfriend, trying to barricade themselves in the bathroom. It is alleged the suspect forced the door open, knocking the 7 months pregnant sister out of the way before grabbing his girlfriend by her ponytail and trying to drag her out of the bathtub where she had fallen. Police say a large amount of her hair was ripped out. The suspect was booked in the Macon County Jail on charges of domestic battery and aggravated battery to a pregnant victim. Decatur. Woman hurt by vase. A man locked his live-in girlfriend out of their home on Dwight Drive on Saturday night, then threw a vase through the window at her head because he was angry at her after she had been knocking on the doors and windows all night, police allege. Sworn statements claim the vase hurled by the 60-year-old suspect sent glass shards into the victim's face, leaving her with multiple bleeding wounds that required hospital attention. The suspect was arrested and booked into the Macon County Jail on charges of domestic battery and aggravated battery. Retirement savings option is needed. 2 years ago, Illinois became the first state in the nation to pass the Secure Choice Savings Program Act, a program that, when enacted on January 1, 2018, will expand retirement savings to approximately 1.5 million workers who do not currently have access to an employment-based benefit. Several other states have since followed suit with similar programs. This week, the U.S. House voted on and passed HJ Resolution 66, a measure opposed by AARP and many others as it repeals the proposed Department of Labor rules meant to guide creation of these programs for workers who desire an easy retirement savings option. AARP Illinois thanks and commends Congressman Rodney Davis for standing up for Illinois by voting no on HJ Resolution 66 and standing up for the retirement security of Illinoisians, despite the fact the majority of his party voted in favor. Illinoisians need savings options as they cannot solely depend on Social Security. Illinois' program is seamless for employers and employees for enrollment and management. Most employees in every area of Illinois don't have the ability to save for retirement at work. This program addresses that problem while providing workers statewide peace of mind that they are saving for retirement. HJ Resolution 66 now sits in the U.S. Senate. AARP stands in opposition and urges the Senate to reject this measure. States need flexibility to create programs like Secure Choice to help private sector employees build a secure retirement. Are convenience stores still convenient? 7-Eleven takes on the on-demand invasion. Dallas. When consumers can have almost anything delivered from Amazon.com within an hour, order via dash buttons or through Amazon Echo's virtual personal assistant Alexa, what does the traditional convenience store still have to offer? Joe DePinto, chief executive officer of 7-Eleven, has been in charge of the world's biggest convenience store chain since 2005, during this age of Amazon and a time when credit card accepting gas pumps mean no one has to come inside the store. The landscape is changing so fast. Yes, there's Amazon and there's Grubhub. It's all about immediate consumption, DePinto says. We have to be prepared and ready in ways that our customers want. And the last 4 or 5 years, we've had our heads down, grinding it out. And we're doing a lot of things right. He's focused on what you want to eat and what you're dieting and when you want to splurge. He cares about how much you'll pay for a single roll of paper towels and that pure alkaline water is a thing with athletes. Stopping at the corner store on the way to and from work, school, and play is still a habit for many, and 7-Eleven wants to remain as relevant as it was 90 years ago when it got its start in Dallas. As long as we don't all become hermits, there will always be a need to get out, get gas, and grab something to go, said Craig Rosenblum, senior director at a food retail consultancy, Willard Bishop. The industry has roughly doubled in size over the last three decades and ended last year with 154,535 stores in the U.S. 7-Eleven is still the face of the industry, said Jeff Leonard, vice president of the National Association of Convenience Stores. Its Slurpees and Big Bite hot dogs have left a good taste in the mouths of millennials. More than 50% of 7-Eleven's customers are millennials, and now they're old enough to buy beer and wine. This generation grew up with a different convenience store, Leonard said. Young people see the convenience store as a place where they can pick up a good sandwich. Older generations think of the bathroom key attached to an old hubcap or a block of wood. That's not as appealing. While there are strong regional convenience store chains such as Texas-based Buc-ee's and the East Coast Wawa and Sheetz chains, on a national level, it's a landscape that 7-Eleven has owned long since it invented the Slurpee in the 1960s. Amazon is testing its own convenience store concept, Amazon Go, which has no cashiers or checkout lines. Like all retailers, De Pinto said he's watched Amazon's video about its store that's been viewed 8.4 million times since December. Even Walmart, which has been in the gasoline business since the 1990s, is testing a couple of convenience store concepts to add to its pumps across America. No one expects Amazon to get into the gasoline business, but convenience stores sell Americans 80% of their gasoline. 7-Eleven has grown from 29,000 worldwide stores in 2006 to 61,500 in 2016. U.S. store count increased over the last decade from 5,500 to 8,900. It already has the young millennial customers that all retailers are chasing. Healthy and cheap are the two words that aren't often associated with convenience stores, but 7-Eleven says it's doing its best to change that. De Pinto, 54, has fundamentally changed 7-Eleven into a retailer that owned half of its stores to a company supporting stores that are 90% owned by entrepreneurs. We're providing independent business owners with the tools to be successful, De Pinto said. We want them to be strong and proud of the brand. 7-Eleven started building its private label program in 2004 with a few paper products and batteries. In 2008, it added some snacks, potato chips, candy, nuts, and beef jerky. Now it has 800 proprietary store-branded products. Franchises can pick and choose from a mix to tailor to their stores, to their neighborhoods. On average, about 15% of the items in a 7-Eleven store will vary. In January, 7-Eleven was named top franchise by Entrepreneur magazine. It was the first time in a decade that the company made it to the top of the Franchise 500 list. The magazine said 7-Eleven has re-imaged the convenience store for the 21st century. De Pinto believes the key to the company's success is its independent store owners, together with a corporate staff of 1,300 that delivers franchises economy of size, technology, and innovations that they wouldn't have alone. United Destinations. United Airlines says it's adding new destinations in smaller cities this summer, including Champaign. The Chicago-based company announced Monday that it'll start flying dozens of new daily round-trip flights. Starting on June 8th, there will be three daily flights between Willard Airport in Champaign and Chicago's O'Hare International Airport. The last time United Express operated through Willard was 1993. Hacking cost. Counterfeit goods, software piracy, and the theft of trade secrets cost the American economy as much as $600 billion a year, a private watchdog says. In a report out Monday, the Commission on Theft of American Intellectual Property says the annual losses range from about $225 billion to $600 billion. The theft of trade secrets alone cost the United States between $180 billion and $540 billion annually. Counterfeit goods cost the United States $29 billion to $41 billion annual. Pirated software costs an additional $18 billion a year. The findings echo those of the Office of the Director of National Intelligence, which in 2015 pegged the annual cost of economic espionage by computer hacking at $400 billion. China crackdown. More than 800 people have been arrested in a crackdown on unlicensed banking operations as Beijing tries to stem outflows of money from the country, the police ministry says. More than 380 underground banks that handled transactions totaling more than $130 billion were broken up in the crackdown launched last year, according to the ministry. Communist leaders allow unlicensed financing activity to support entrepreneurs, but try to stop activity they say threatens the state-run banking system, supports crime, or helps people violate foreign exchange controls or other regulations. AT&T Time Warner Deal. AT&T's $85 billion purchase of Time Warner may be getting an easier path to approval after the chief telecommunications regulator says it isn't likely to review the deal. Federal Communications Commission Chairman Ajit Pai said the agency likely won't be involved because of changes in the deal structure. The Justice Department still needs to approve the merger, but the FCC was considered the tougher cop. It must determine a deal is in the public's interest, a broader criteria than antitrust. Merger doubts. The London Stock Exchange's merger with Dutch Borsch has been thrown into doubt after the LSE decided it couldn't comply with last-minute conditions imposed by European regulators. The deal announced almost a year ago would have created a company worth $30 billion in which the German financial exchange would own a 54.4% stake. In a statement late Sunday, the London Exchange said the European Commission, the executive branch of the European Union, was demanding that it sell its majority stake in MTS, an electronic trading platform for European wholesale government bonds, to resolve competition concerns. Buffett loads up on shares of Apple, Omaha, Nebraska. Billionaire Warren Buffett, famously leery of technology companies, has loaded up on Apple shares after noticing how inseparable iPhone users are from the gadget once they get one in their pocket. Buffett said on CNBC Monday that Berkshire Hathaway now holds about 133 million shares of Apple after buying yet more of the company's stock this year. That's more than double stake that Berkshire revealed earlier this month. Buffett spoke to CNBC at length after releasing his annual letter to shareholders over the weekend. Buffett's aggressive buying spree caught many off guard because he has long said it's too difficult to predict which tech companies will prevail. In this case, perceptions matter. Buffett sees Apple as more of a consumer products maker than a tech company, which brought the iPhone maker right into his comfort zone. Apple strikes me as having quite a sticky product and an enormously useful product to people who use it. Not that I do, said Buffett, who produced the basic flip phone that he relies on. Buffett was struck by how many of his grandchildren's friends use iPhones and how many people visiting the Berkshire-owned Nebraska Furniture Mart, which has an electronics wing, wanted to replace one iPhone with another. Apple wasn't the only investment evolution for Buffett, who bought more than $9 billion of airline stocks after years of advising investors to steer clear of the industry, citing its significant capital requirements and poor returns. Buffett said it's true airlines had a bad century, but now he believes that consolidation in the industry has created a healthier environment, pointing out that planes are flying at least 80% capacity at major carriers. Berkshire Hathaway holds a sizable stake in American Airlines, Delta Airlines, United Continental, and Southwest. On Monday, United announced that it was ramping up flights in a number of crucial locations. Contentious political divisions in the U.S. were addressed briefly, Buffett said. He agrees with President Donald Trump on some issues such as entitlements, Social Security, and the fact that some businesses face too much regulation. Buffett says he will judge Trump's presidency 4 years from now based on how safe he has kept the country, how the economy is doing, and on how many people are sharing in the wealth. Buffett said he doesn't think the border adjustment tax proposal Republicans are considering will happen because it's too complicated. Consumers will end up footing the bill if retailers have to pay more taxes on imports, he said. While the longtime Democrat who supported Hillary Clinton last year said he'd be unlikely to vote for Trump, he said, mixing investments and politics is a mistake. The U.S. economy will grow regardless of who is president. The country always comes back, Buffett said. Suspicious fire burns empty Pana building in Pana. A fast-moving fire of unknown origin destroyed an old storefront on U.S. 51 in Pana on Monday evening. I went by at 4:30 and didn't see anything, Pana Mayor Steve Sipes said. I came back a little after 5 and the entire building was burning. Police Chief Daniel Bland says the fire was suspicious in nature. There was no electrical or gas service to the building, which had been abandoned for years. Bland said the fire was similar to several others in Pana over the last 12 months and that the Illinois Fire Marshal's Office, along with Pana Police, were investigating. No one was hurt, but it was a big, dangerous fire, Bland said. We'll take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the Decatur Herald and Review. Please stay tuned.